Proverbs chapter 16 this evening, and we have learned some good stuff in the book of Proverbs already, and there's no doubt in my mind, and I imagine by this point there's no doubt in your mind either, but what Solomon truly was a wise man. The things that he wrote, the wisdom that God gave to him, he had some insight into things that some of the psychiatrists and psychologists and sociologists and all of those folks today are still trying to figure out. If they just go back and look at what Solomon taught, they would know a lot more, perhaps, than they do about some of these things. He had some insight, certainly. Chapter 16, beginning with verse 5, "Everyone that is proud in heart is an abomination to the Lord. Though hand join in hand, he shall not be unpunished." You can be certain of it, that someone who is arrogant and stands against God, no matter how many of them are, no matter how close-knit the group is, they won't go unpunished. You know, many times there are what we refer to as conspiracy theories out there about, oh, how this group is doing everything and they're controlling everything and they never get caught. Nobody ever knows. Most of the time it's always some group that nobody even knows who they are and this kind of thing. And, you know, sometimes it gets pretty outlandish, some of the stuff that people come up with, following all these conspiracies that they say are going on. But the fact of the matter is, no matter how big a group, no matter how secretive the group, even if a group is able to escape punishment here on this earth, even if they're never found out, even if they gain power throughout the whole world, the fact of the matter remains that if they're arrogant in their hearts and they're against God, God will not allow them to go unpunished. Now, they may not necessarily be punished in this life. Some of them may go to their graves thinking that they've gotten away with it, but they will be punished. God promises that. He says, though hand join in hand. It doesn't matter if they band together. You ever play that game Red Rover when you were a kid? We used to play that a lot. That was one of those vacation Bible school games we'd play, and on the playground at school. You couldn't play it by yourself unless you had just a real big family, and I was an only child, so I never got to play it any other time. But, you know, everybody, you hold hands, and then, you know, see, Red Rover, send so-and-so over, and they come running, and if you can stop them and keep them from breaking through where you're holding those hands, then they have to get on the end of your line. And the idea there is, you know, if you can hold on tight enough, nobody can break through that. Well, some people think that way toward God. They think if we could just get together, if we could get enough people together, if we could get enough nations together, if we could get enough leaders, you know, we could band together against God. Solomon says, no. No, you can't. Because it doesn't matter how many of you there are. It doesn't matter if the good guys are outnumbered. God, by himself, makes the majority. How many times did the Israelites go up against far mightier nations than they were when they were conquering the land of Canaan? Nations bigger, with better armies, iron chariots, and horses, and all of these kinds of technological advances for that day and time, and yet the Israelites beat them one right after the other because God was on their side. It doesn't matter how many band together. Then we see in verse 8, "Better is little with righteousness than great revenues without right." I think you're better off to be living in poverty and be doing what's right than to be living in a mansion, driving the finest cars, wearing the finest clothes, and being in the wrong. And we need to understand that. So many times we're striving for what everybody else has. Whether it be we look at well, that church has got a bigger, nicer building than we do, or they've got a better this, or a better that, or there's more going there, more doing this, or so-and-so has a nicer house than us. Whatever it is, we need to understand. It doesn't matter. If you're not right, you can have the whole world and it won't do you any good. it's better to have a little and righteousness along with it. But we've got to be ready to take on those situations where we may not have the most, we may not have what is considered the best, but we have what is right. In verse 16, how much better it is to get wisdom than gold, and to get understanding is rather to be chosen than silver. Again, the idea, wisdom and understanding, knowing what's right, being able to do what's right, that's better than silver and gold. That doesn't work that way in our world today. In our world, silver and gold is everything. You've heard the new golden rule, he who has the gold makes the rules? Well, that's the way the world sees it. But the fact of the matter is, Solomon understands because he had the gold. He had the silver. And he understood that the wisdom and understanding was better than that gold and silver. And imagine now if he could go back and do it all over again. He would have given up some of those things that he got and just held on to that wisdom and understanding that he had from the beginning that God gave him. He got himself into trouble with some of those other things and with the women that he heaped up to himself. In verse 18, you've probably heard this one somewhere before. You've probably heard it misquoted. Pride goes before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. I've seen that sometimes. Have you ever seen that where somebody is just so arrogant and so full of pride, and then they trip and fall flat on their face? I mean, just, and you want to laugh at them, but you know that's not a good attitude to have either. But you just think, you know, that serves you right for having that kind of an attitude. I remember times in sports sometimes, one team or one player is supposed to be just so great, so much better than the others. And they're just so arrogant because they just know they're the best. And then that other team that wasn't expected wins. And sometimes, you know, you just have to cheer for that underdog sometimes. And that's the way God is. God wants the underdog to win. He wants the one that's humble, the one who's down to earth, the one who's not puffed up and proud and arrogant. So he will, in fact, knock them down sometimes. But pride goes before destruction and a haughty spirit before a fall. Verse 24 then, pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Boy, isn't that the truth? Don't you just love it when folks say pleasant things to you? There is nothing better than to have somebody say something pleasant to you. My mother still remembers a time when I was older than Xander. I probably was 7, 8 years old, maybe. And she had gone to the hair shop and gotten her hair done, and she didn't like it. She thought it made her look old and everything, and I think even some of the other people in the family had made some comments to her about, you know, how it made her look older or something of that nature. And she made a comment, well, I look like an old lady. And this, of course, when I was a little child, she was still young. And I said, well, Mommy, you're a pretty old lady. But she likes that. She still remembers that offhanded compliment. but you know, I was just talking to me that, you know, I was complimenting her. And she understood that. She took it that way too. And she still remembers, I mean, that's probably been 25 years or more ago, but she still remembers those pleasant words. She still, as a matter of fact, the last time I was with her, she reminded, you remember when I don't know, I don't remember that. But I'm glad you do. But those things, when folks say nice things to us, it sticks with us. We remember it for years and years and years. Some of those things that we say, well, I'll never forget that. And a lot of times, we don't. We may forget a lot of other things, but we continue to remember some of those pleasant words. And sometimes, we may not remember the specific words that were spoken, but we remember that they were pleasant words, that they were comforting words in a time of loss or whatever it might have been. And even though we couldn't tell you what they said, we know they gave words of comfort, and I felt better after I talked to them. And One of the things that we were told as preachers when we went out, as we were to go to preach a funeral, was, you know, the folks won't remember what you say, but they'll remember how you say it a lot of times. They may not be able to remember anything that you said, but they'll remember whether you were comforting to them or whether you were said things that hurt them. They'll remember that. And so that's certainly the case. Pleasant words are sweet to the soul and health to the bones. Do you realize that a child's health can actually be destroyed by the words that are spoken by that child's parents or guardian? Parents, guardians, grandparents, those who are, can actually cause harm to a child's physical health by the things that they say to that child. Certainly is the case. We don't understand the power that those words have. They cut like a knife, and they can do damage like a club. And then, of course, verse 25 we saw earlier in chapter 14 and verse 12, same verse, quoted again. Those things that God thinks are important, he says it twice. There's a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. And then verse 31. We live in a society today where old age isn't honored. People are ashamed. They say, oh, I'm old, as though that's a bad thing. That's a good thing. Now, I know, you know, you feel rotten and think, oh, that's from that symbol. But it's a good thing to be able to live to, as they say, a ripe old age. That's a good thing. That's a blessing from God. That's one of the blessings that is given to those, you know, children, obey your parents, that you may have long life on the earth. That's a blessing. That's something that we should look forward to. Verse 31 says, the hoary head, or in other words, the gray head, the white hair on the head. It says that hoary head is a crown of glory. If it be found in the way of righteousness. So Solomon qualified that. He said, you know, it's a crown of glory to have white hair or gray hair from age if you're righteous. Now, if you're wicked, that just means you've had longer to do wicked things. But if you're righteous, that's a crown of glory. I may step on some toes here, but I'm going to say it nonetheless. I think it is an absolute shame for folks to dye their hair. The Bible teaches us that gray hair is a good thing, something we should be proud of. And I think it's a shame to cover that up and try to make it look like we're younger than we are and that kind of thing. I see some folks shaking their heads. I said I'd step on some toes. But it's a shame that we live in a society where people look down on old age and look down on somebody because they got gray hair or white hair or whatever. That should be something that should be honored. And that should be something that should be a crown of glory, not something to be ashamed of. Now, you can argue with me if you want, but you can argue with Solomon, too. He said it's a crown of glory. So take that for what it's worth. That's what he said. Chapter 17 says... Yeah, I hear some amens from the folks over there with no hair. They might have some gray hair. Say any hair. Verse 2 of chapter 17 says, a wise servant shall have rule over a son that causes shame, and shall have part in the inheritance among the brethren. A wise servant is going to have rule over the foolish son that's a troublemaker. Have you ever seen that happen? Somebody disinherit their family and leave everything to a friend or to somebody that worked for them or, you know, whatever. You see that a lot of times in the corporate world. Somebody worked hard to build a business, and their children were just scoundrels. Probably may have been because they didn't spend enough time raising them and were too busy with the business. But whatever the case may be, the children, they don't want to leave it to them. They're not going to take care of it. So they pick one of the employees, somebody that's worked hard for the company, and they leave it to them, put them in charge of it. Leave them as the president of the company and leave it all behind and don't leave anything to the family sometimes. That's certainly the case. That wisdom, even if you're in a position of servanthood, you may wind up moving up by using some wisdom in those situations. In verse 3, he says, the refining pot is for silver, and the furnace is for gold. but the Lord tries the heart or tests the heart. You know, they use those different techniques to purify the silver and the gold and to test it to make sure it's good enough and of enough quality, high enough quality. But the Lord doesn't mess with testing silver and gold. He tests hearts. And that's what really matters. It goes back to that about the wisdom and understanding being better than gold and silver. He's going to test the heart. And if the heart is right, if the heart will withstand the test, then we're in good shape. But the gold and silver, they have to be tried in order to be of a certain quality, and our heart has to be of a certain quality to receive praise and honor from God. In verse 5, we've seen something similar to this before. Whoso mocketh the poor reproaches his maker, and he that is glad at calamity shall not be unpunished. Whoso mocks the poor reproaches his maker. Or in other words, shows contempt for God by mocking someone who is poor. But then he says, he that is glad at calamity shall not be unpunished. I remember the scenes after 9/11 when those towers were crumbling and they had camera crews in some of those countries in the Middle East. The people were cheering and clapping and dancing around and so happy about that. And I thought, what a sad sight that was. Solomon said, isn't it terrible to rejoice over somebody else's calamity? I can't imagine. I know probably when the tsunami hit over in Indonesia, and some folks over here were probably glad about that. I think it's terrible. I'm sure there were folks who were glad when the hurricanes hit. And those rich folks that had their beach houses done, they deserve to get that stuff destroyed. I'm glad it happened to them. There's always some folks that just have a wicked heart that are going to rejoice at other people's suffering. But the Bible tells us, weep with those who weep. And rejoice with those who rejoice. We don't rejoice over someone else's calamity. That's a terrible thing. And Solomon says that if we do, we'll not go unpunished for that kind of an attitude. Verse 10 says, a reproof enters more into a wise man than 100 strikes into a fool. Isn't that the truth? There are some folks, doesn't matter what happens to them. Doesn't matter how many times they go to jail. Doesn't matter what fines they have to pay or what torturous events occur to them, what calamities occur. They just never learn. And Solomon says there are some folks like that. There are some folks you could beat them with 100 stripes and it wouldn't do a lick of good. But other folks, he says the wise man, You don't have to beat him. You just speak the words of reproof, and it'll prick him in the heart. It'll get right to the center of the matter and straighten things up. Certainly, we want to be like the wise and not like the fool, so that we can have that reproof be all that's needed to correct us. Verse 12 says, "Let a bear robbed of her wealth meet a man rather than a fool in his folly." Now let's say there's not much of anything out there that's any meaner than a mother bear who's been robbed of her cubs. I know I wouldn't want to meet a bear anyway, but certainly not under those circumstances. But Solomon says you'd be better off to meet a bear that has been robbed of her cubs than to run across a fool in his folly. Sometimes that foolish person can do more damage to somebody. Sometimes worse than death by coming in contact with somebody that just destroys your life, just tears everything to pieces. It'd be, as the saying goes, better off dead. But he says, boy, it'd be better off to meet a bear than to run into a man who's a fool in the midst of his folly. Then verse 17, another passage that's familiar to most of us probably. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. If you've got friends who, when the going gets tough, turn their back on you, they're not friends. They're acquaintances. And then you've got some acquaintances who, when the going gets really tough, they don't even know who you are. They're not even acquaintances. Solomon says, a friend loves at all times. Not just at the good times. It reminds me of the prodigal son over in Luke 15. Here he was. Had money. Throwing parties. Boy, he was surrounded by folks then. But where did they go when he ran out of money and he needed a place to stay and food to eat and a job? They went on to the next gullible guy who had money. They didn't stick with him. They disappeared. And that happens to many, many people. And he says, and a brother is born for adversity. Who do you call when the going gets tough? When you really need somebody, who do you call? You don't just get out the phone book and find a name. Oh, let's call them. No, you don't call somebody that you know you can count on. And you know, most of the time, those people that you can count on. If it's not a physical family member, then probably it's a spiritual family member. Those are the people that you can count on. You're not gonna count on just anybody out there off the street. But these are the things that Solomon tells us, things that should be common sense, but that so many times folks don't understand. They think, they're my friend. No. I know someone who had known a fellow years ago, and since that time, this particular individual has become famous, very wealthy, and very well known throughout the United States. They'd known each other probably 30 years ago or more, back before this happened. Well, this individual called the man. Not calling him, but sent him a letter. Just said, hey, I just wanted to drop you a note. I'm so-and-so. Remember we did such and such together and so forth? And he got back a form letter. Fella, I don't know if he ever even got the real letter or if they just had somebody handling his mail that just sent out a form letter. But it was, that's just all there was to it. Just a form letter. They thought he was looking for money maybe, because he said, we used to work together in mission work or something. Oh, I'm sorry, all of his funds are already allotted for this year. With the form letter. Some friends. They did close. But fame and fortune had separated them. Aren't friends anymore. When you get into situations like that, you find out who your true friends really are. And then in verse 22, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. This is the passage we often hear, laughter does good like a medicine. And this is the passage that they get that from. A merry heart, good like a medicine. It's not just the act of laughing. You can laugh and it won't help you, but it's the attitude that brings forth laughter naturally. I mean, you can force laughter when you're sad and when your spirit's broken. You can still do that, but it doesn't accomplish anything. He's saying here, it's the merry heart. It's the cheerful disposition. It's being joyful. That's what's going to bring the good to you and help like a medicine would. But a broken spirit, he said, rise up the bone. Have you ever seen someone who, for some reason or another, went to the doctor and got a bad report, and it broke their spirit and it broke their will to live, and even though they still could have had good years, they just withered up and died. We've probably all seen that happen. On various occasions where people just lost the will to live. The broken spirit just dried up close. They didn't have anything to live for anymore. They didn't have any reason to go on. Their spirit just wasn't in it anymore, so to speak. And so it is with our attitudes and with our disposition. we can have a lot to live for, or we can feel like, well, I don't have any reason to live. And we can actually shorten our lives by having a negative attitude all the time. We need to have positive attitudes. Now, you know, the Bible says who could add a day to his life by worrying. Well, certainly not. By worrying, you may take some days off your life, but you're sure not going to add any. If you want to add days to your life, have a merry heart. Be cheerful. Be happy. We'll be cheerful and happy. We'll be healthier and live longer. That's what Solomon's telling us. A cheerful heart does good like a medicine. And then the final verse in verse 17, verse 28, says, even a fool, when he holds his peace, is counted wise. And he that shuts his lips is esteemed as a man of understanding. And some of you are saying, well, if you just shut up about 10 minutes ago, I'd have thought you were wiser. But it's true, isn't it? Somebody can sit there and say nothing and just kind of have a wise look on their face, and it may just be that, you know, they're trying to remember their name. I don't know. But they can just sit there and say nothing, and folks will say, oh, you know, he never says anything. He must just have some really deep thoughts. I wonder what he's thinking. I mean, he may not be thinking anything deeper than, why, should I have a Big Mac or a filet of fish for lunch today? Yeah, that may be as deep as his thoughts are. But people look at somebody just being silent, and they think, because they don't know. See, we have a tendency when we don't know, so we just do one. But when we open our mouth, then people know. We can't hide it for very long. We're better off sometimes just to keep our mouth shut, hold our peace, and let folks think we're smart, rather than, as the saying goes, it's better to hold your peace and let everybody think you're a fool than to open your mouth and prove it. But the fact of the matter is, sometimes we would be better off to just be quiet. If you're here tonight and you have a need to respond to the invitation, know that we have opportunities sometimes to learn and to do better than we've done in the past. We need to take advantage of those opportunities. If you're here tonight and one of the verses that we've looked at tonight has pointed something out to you that you need to correct in your life, something that you need to work on, you may need the prayers of the church to do so. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as